Hello everyone, this is Yvonne for a brand new episode of A to Easy. Today we will be discussing peptic ulcer disease with Harry.
Hey everyone, nice to be back.
So, to start, what are peptic ulcers? It's the presence of one or more ulcerative lesions in the stomach or duodenum.
Okay, wait, hold up. What's an ulcer though?
Okay, so you're putting me on the spot there. So in terms of GI pathology, ulcers is when there is a damage to the gastric mucosa extending beyond the muscularis mucosa layer into the submucosa.
Okay, so an ulcer is when there's damage to the mucosal layer, and what can damage that mucosa?
So there are many causes. The commonest cause is infection with H. pylori, so Helicobacter pylori. Then the second most common cause is prolonged NSAID use and possibly in combination with glucocorticoids, which makes it even worse. There are other rare cases such as Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, where there's an overproduction of gastrin, a hormone that stimulates acid production.
Okay, so the most common causes to remember for third year are H. pylori, which I don't know, there's an Imperial lecturer who's just got an amazing voice and it sounds so much less grand and I say Helicobacter pylori. But yeah, so H. pylori and NSAIDs are your main causes of peptic ulcers.
Precisely.
And how do H. pylori and NSAIDs cause ulcers?
A bit of pathology there. There are three important cells in gastric secretions. We have the parietal cells, the mucosal cells, and the chief cells. The parietal cells secrete hydrochloric acid, an intrinsic factor. And they're stimulated by acetylcholine, histamine, and gastrin. They're also inhibited by prostaglandins and somatostatin. Somatostatin, always remember, it just stops everything, okay? The important thing is to remember that the parietal cells are the ones that are responsible for secreting hydrochloric acid, and they're also inhibited by prostaglandins. Then we also have the mucosal cells, which basically secrete a protective mucus, and therefore protect the stomach lining. And then we also have the chief cells, which secrete pepsinogen. So, H. pylori secretes urease, which releases cytotoxins, which disrupt the mucosal barrier and damage the underlying cells, and therefore creates gastric ulcers. It can also create duodenal ulcers by inhibiting somatostatin secretion, which, as we said before, is a stop hormone. And therefore, since the stop hormone is basically prevented from being there, it causes an increase in gastrin secretion, which therefore stimulates the parietal cells, which, as we said, are the acid-secreting cells. Therefore, we have more acid production, causing duodenal ulcers. NSAIDs, on the other hand... Okay, so what are the mechanisms of NSAIDs, Harry?
COX-1 and 2 inhibitors...
Precisely. So, by inhibiting COX-1 and COX-2, you decrease prostaglandin production, which, as we said before, is protective of the mucosa because it reduces the hydrochloric acid secretion. And therefore, by removing that protective factor, we result in erosion of the gastric mucosa and damage.
Okay, so there are three different types of cells to remember in the gastric mucosa. There are parietal cells, which are acid secreting. There are mucosal cells, which protect the mucosa by secreting mucus, and there are chief cells, which secrete pepsinogen, which break down proteins. H. pylori secretes urease, damaging the mucosal barrier, and somatostatin, which increases acid production. NSAIDs, on the other hand, reduce prostaglandins, which means there's more acid production by parietal cells, so they all end up causing ulcers.
Perfect.
So how does the patient actually present?
So they typically present with epigastric pain, but patients can also be asymptomatic as well.
And how can we differentiate between a gastric and a duodenal ulcer clinically?
So, although it's not always the case in clinical practice, the classic difference is that the pain is greater whilst eating in case of gastric ulcers, where the pain decreases with duodenal ulcers. So a mnemonic to remember this, which admittedly I have stolen from somewhere, is G for gastric, to remember that there is greater pain, and D for duodenal, to remember that there is decreased pain with meals. As a result, patients with duodenal ulcers put on weight because by eating, they reduce there are levels of pain, and therefore it's more comforting.
Okay, so, I mean, I was going to applaud you there for coming up with something that you haven't, but it's good. G is for greater pain during meals, and D is for decreased pain with meals. And it's G for gastric, D for duodenal. Okay, so with that in mind, how do we investigate these patients?
So firstly, we start, as always, with trying to identify their etiology. So therefore, we take a full history, understanding the symptoms, and checking their medication history for NSAIDs and glucocorticoids. And then in terms of more specific investigations, we have the carbon 13 urea breath test, which we can use to assess the H. pylori status, as well as a stool antigen, which also can test for H. pylori. It's important to ensure that the patient has not taken a PPI, proton pump inhibitor, aka omeprazole, in the past 2 weeks, or any antibiotics in the past 4 weeks, because it makes the test invalid. In older patients, it's also important to consider an OGD, which is an esophageal gastroduodenoscopy, and biopsies, because they're more diagnostically accurate, and also you are more concerned about malignancy with an older person, and therefore you really want to make sure what is the cause of the ulcer. Especially if you're suspecting bleeding, it's also good to do an FBC and use an ease to look for hemoglobin levels, whether the patient is losing any blood and whether the hemoglobin is dropping. However, in community, in patients who are relatively young, there is a test and treat strategy. So patients with dyspepsia and a positive carbon 13 urea breath test receive treatment without further test because it automatically assumes that there are ulcers.
All right, things to bear in mind then. Firstly, do they have H. pylori, which you need to test for? And you can test for that using the carbon 13 urea breath test, of course I knew that, or you can do a stool antigen test, and these are both lab tests. Then, if once you've considered do they have H. pylori, you need to bear in mind with those tests whether they've had any recent PPI or antibiotic use, as that might affect the results. So at the bedside, you're taking a full history and examining them, and you're looking for epigastric tenderness and examination. For bloods, if you're worried about bleeding, you're doing an FBC and UNEs, and the diagnosis is ultimately confirmed on imaging via an OGD. And of course, if you want to confirm H. pylori, you do those tests we already mentioned. So let's say we found a peptic ulcer on OGD. How should we manage this patient?
So if they're H. pylori positive, the first line treatment is H. pylori eradication therapy with a full dose of proton pump inhibitor for 4 to 8 weeks. If they're H. pylori negative and there is associated NSAID use, you obviously stop the NSAIDs, and a full dose of PPI therapy alone should be offered for 4 to 8 weeks. However, if someone comes into the hospital with a bleed or perforation, we just eradicate, as patients often get PPIs, which, as we mentioned before, interfere with the test. So if they're clinically unwell and you suspect a peptic ulcer, you just treat for H. pylori.
What's eradication therapy exactly?
So it's typically comprised of three things. It's amoxicillin, clarithromycin, and PPI, as we said before, omeprazole. PPIs are anti-secretory, which reduces stomach acid production, which therefore allows for the ulcer to heal. And in patients who are penicillin allergic, there is also the alternative option of having metronidazole instead of amoxicillin. Of course, as always, we check the local guidelines because they can have slight differences amongst different NHS trusts.
That is always the right answer, check local guidelines. But okay, so we've got two principles here. If it's H. pylori, you're going for triple therapy, eradication therapy. And if it's related to NSAID use, you don't need to necessarily do that. You just need to give them full dose PPI therapy for 4 to 8 weeks instead. So triple therapy is classically amox, clary, and omeprazole. If they're pen allergic, give metro instead. With that treatment in mind, what are the complications of peptic ulcer disease?
So apart from the discomfort that it can cause to the patient, there is a risk of bleeding as there is erosion, and also the risk of perforation due to the erosion of the mucosa, which can result in peritonitis, both of which can be life-threatening. So there's also gastric outlet obstruction, may result from strictures, and stenosis of the pylorus due to the chronic inflammatory process and scarring that may go on if it's undetected and untreated. Lastly, gastric malignancy is a lot more likely in H. pylori positive patients. And that's all for today.
Is that it? Oh. Yeah, okay. Awesome. All right.
Hey guys, this is Sally, and here is your summary for today's episode. Peptic ulcer disease is when there are one or more ulcerative lesions in the stomach or duodenum, most commonly due to H. pylori and or NSAIDs. The presentation is dyspepsia, which is worse with food for gastric ulcers and better with food for duodenal ulcers. The diagnostic test is commonly a urea breath test for the presence of H. pylori, and the treatment is H. pylori eradication plus PPIs. It is really important to treat peptic ulcer disease as it increases the risk of bleeding, perforation, and malignancy.